Listen.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Yoga is an ancient form of physical, mental, and spiritual exercise. It was initiated as a way to achieve peace of mind and as a way to experience one's true self. Years ago, yoga seemed exotic to most Americans, and finding a place to learn and practice yoga was as difficult as finding a good bagel in Charlotte. But that has now changed. Not just the bagel, the yoga. Yoga has blossomed in the Queen City. There are dozens of places to learn and practice, and many of them offer different approaches. Moreover, some people who have practiced in other parts of the country say that the yoga community here is unique. So this hour, we explore yoga with some of the people in town who know it best. They are all instructors of various forms of yoga. Liza Morgan teaches yoga at Yoga One and is co-founder of Yoga on Tap. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Stacy Winslow is the owner of Evolution Yoga NC. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Mary Lou Buck teaches at Cornwell Center. That's at Myers Park Baptist Church, also at the YWCA, and is founder of Yoga for Life, which I believe is one of the earliest yoga centers in Charlotte. Thank you for being here. And Adam Whiting is an instructor at Y2 Yoga and Noda Yoga and the founder of Big Horizon Yoga, all of which I'm sure we'll talk about in the course of the hour.
Good morning.
Welcome. Now, I've given a short description of yoga from not even an amateur. I don't practice yoga. So from an ignorant point of view, how would you describe yoga? I'm not sure who to ask that question of. Mary Lou, you're the one that's been practicing the longest.
I think you did great. Traditional yoga is more than physical exercise, which so many people practice for today.
Mm-hmm. Right. But wasn't it also
body, mind, and spirit?
Wasn't it also originally, at least, associated with Eastern religions?
Yes.
So how does that work? How does that jibe with Western culture?
Well, it was brought to Charlotte or to the West, probably late 1800s, early 1900s. Largely meditation to begin with, but then the physical yoga, the postures came in. And I think traditional yoga in the early years, it was more traditional yoga, mind, body, spirit, the physical, but really focusing on sensations, working with breath. And then later on, different styles began to develop.
And I want to hear from all of you about how you got into this. But let me begin with Mary Lou Buck again, because she is She's the queen. She has been here doing this forever. And when you started doing it, it was not the hip thing to do. It was out of the ordinary. So how did you even find out about it, number one? Number two, how did you become attracted to it?
Well, in 1969, Ann Owens taught a yoga class at Myers Park Baptist Church, which was, of course, very unusual for a church at that time. I couldn't go to her class. My friends were doing it, loved it. So I actually got a book and started with a book, and then I took every class. I finally took Ann's class, mm-hmm. and she comes to my classes now. But I just took every class
but
I could
why?
Find.
What made you think this is something I ought to investigate?
Well, I grew up a good little girl that had to do everything right. I went to the infirmary in college. My shoulders hurt all the time, lots of tension. Through yoga, I could get rid of that tension. I could go to sleep at night, and I just realized that this was something that was really important to me. I majored in physical education, had taught swimming and exercise, and so I just moved into yoga.
And times have certainly changed, because you described yourself as a good little girl. I'm not saying you're not a good little girl, Liza, but one of the things that you do is you have brought yoga, and we'll talk about this later, you have brought yoga to a brewery.
So,
this is a whole different
yoga
thing.
Yoga and beer, it's
right.
A new thing.
How did you get started, and what made you get started?
I grew up dancing competitively, and so dance, stretching, all of that was a big part of my life. And I got to a point, I was living in Los Angeles, and I was so sick of feeling like I had to prove things to people, feeling like I was going to auditions, not for me, not for the love of what I was doing, but just to get a part or impress people with what I could do. And so I really took a break from all of that, and I walked into my first yoga class, and it felt like I was coming home, because I I didn't see any mirrors on the wall. The teacher really spoke to keep your eyes on your own mat. This is your practice. Whatever happens for you here is what you need. And it was just the most freeing thing I've experienced. I got back in touch with my body in ways that I had kind of lost after dancing. I was feeling really out of shape and had lost some strength, lost some flexibility. And coming back to yoga was just a lifesaver. It changed a lot.
And has it changed your perspective on your life, on the world?
It actually really has. I feel more connected to people because I've made friends through the yoga community that I don't know if I would be friends with otherwise. It really has united people in my life and made me feel like I'm a part of something bigger than myself.
Stacy.
Yes.
How about you? Good morning. What brought you to yoga?
Oh, interesting. I am curiosity and then ego.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, do tell.
Well, I took my first class around 2002, 2003 in a gym in Virginia. It was the worst experience ever. I was...
Well, that's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, well, but that's very common for people in their first yoga experience. It can be very unpleasant. And I decided, well, this yoga's not going to beat me. I'm going to beat it. So I started a yoga practice at home, which I don't recommend beginning a practice at home. But that's what I did until I moved to Charlotte in 2007, where I had my first class in a studio. Uh-huh. And in a studio environment, you really come into a yoga community, a group of people that are wonderful.
But why? Why did you start that with that very first class, which turned out to be an unpleasant experience, which I want to go back to? But what took you to that class? What in you said, I need to try this out? What were you looking for?
I was just very fitness oriented and being fitness minded. I ran track in high school. I had had children by the time I came to my first yoga class. I was trying to get back into my physical fitness and I was trying all types of things to see what would stick.
Now, Adam, you're the only guy in the room. I'm not saying that it's all white women who practice yoga because we have an African-American here, although that is the image, I think.
That would be me,
throughout
yes.
the country. But here you are. What brought you to yoga and not lifting weights or running on a treadmill in the gym?
My path to yoga is fairly long and winding. It started in my early 20s, 20, 21. And it was a pretty tumultuous time for me. I lost my father to leukemia. And then upon graduating from college, I studied at North Carolina School of the Arts up in Winston-Salem. And when I graduated from college, I followed the current of graduating artists and moved to New York City. Mm-hmm. And I happened to move to New York City August 24th, 2001. So I lived in New York City for 2 years or 2 weeks before the morning of September 11th. And ended up finding employment directly across the street from the recovery site. So every morning for me, my first experience in New York City was walking by the wreckage, walking by the recovery, watching the fires burn. And I tried to do what I saw other New Yorkers do, which is keep your head down, walk really fast, and show zero emotion, and just be that New Yorker, just do it, just move through it. And it ended up internalizing a lot of things for me, and which ended up manifesting in very, very physical sensations. Mm. And I later learned that they were panic attacks. But when it first started manifesting, it manifested with severe chest pains, severe dizziness that had me on the ground, numbness in my left arm and left face, which made me convinced I was having a stroke or a heart attack. So I ended up seeking medical care and spent a lot of time seeing a lot of doctors, taking a lot of MRIs and CAT scans and blood tests and EKGs. And ultimately, they said, well, you are physically healthy, but you are not quite mentally healthy, and ultimately was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and with anxiety and panic disorder, and was given medication to help tamp that down and help take control of the symptoms. But I was searching always for something something that I could do with my life to help take control of this, not just pills that I take, which were super effective and helped me rein in everything.
So I understand why yoga might help, given the fact that we said it brings you peace of mind. One of the goals is to bring you peace of mind, I guess, right, to center you. But how does that work?
It's just like Liza said, when I was taken to my first yoga class, it felt like I was coming home. I unrolled the mat and I had no idea what the poses were. And it's back to that first yoga class where you just feel like you are completely lost. But deeper below that feeling of being lost was that feeling of being understood, of knowing that you can come to your mat and you can do you. You can be yourself. You can follow the cues. And more so than the physical postures and what we talked about before about where yoga originated, the physical postures were originally made for students to come and to exercise and to burn off this extra energy so that then they could sit down and meditate and study.
Correct.
So for me, the meditation, the pranayama, the breath work was pivotal for me to get control of my symptoms, to actually be able to sit down with a strong, straight spine and to be able to breathe for 20 minutes and focus on these visualizations of, you know, counting the inhales, counting the exhales, feeling the energy in my body. More so feeling myself being able to take control of the energy in my body and not letting the energy in my body take control of me.
What it sounds like, from somebody who's never experienced it, never watched it either, but what it sounds like to me is that you're disconnecting yourself from the world.
I would say that's accurate.
It's,
I would say, in a
you.
Meaningful way. Yeah, absolutely.
In a meaningful way.
With intention. That's kind of, yeah, what comes up for me a lot is that when I first started meditating and practicing, I felt I did have this feeling of like, I have to get it right. So why do I keep on thinking about what I have to do later? Why are these thoughts coming in about like what the person next to me is doing? And it's a continuing of coming back to breath and coming back to whatever intention is right at that moment. And we're never going to sit there and like be free of all thoughts. That really, I don't know anybody that can really sit there and be free of all thoughts all the time or really separate yourself out. But it's more like just intentionally breathing and moving and being a part of the whole and checking in with what I need on my mat at that moment.
Now, not all yoga is created equal. Evidently, there are many different kinds of yoga: power yoga, hot yoga, gentle yoga, deep stretch yoga. There are probably many others and other names, and I probably got them all wrong. How many different varieties are there, and how many do the four of you practice or represent? Mary Lou?
Well, I am a Kripalu teacher, which is more traditional yoga. I mean, I believe in working, strengthening, stretching, the whole bit, focusing. But a big part of it is focusing. I have done some yin yoga, and yin, you hold the postures a long time, working more on the connective tissue. I've done a number of kinds. What I teach is sort of a combination of traditional, a lot of good warm-up stretching, and vinyasa.
You're throwing out all these names, and they're all
vinyasa is
names.
Vinyasa is a flow of a sequence of postures, of asanas, which are the postures. And many people call their style vinyasa because the whole class is vinyasa.
Let me stop you there. We'll come back to more of this in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and WBTV News 3, mornings and evenings, the First Alert weather team forecasts weather for the region. WBTV First Alert mobile app brings interactive radar and up-to-date forecast. WBTV on your side.
Well, today we're talking about yoga or yogurt. No, that's tomorrow. We're talking about yogurt tomorrow. Tomorrow we're talking about food. When we think food, we think restaurants, we think grocery store. We should be thinking farms. And according to the USDA, the number of farms and farmers are declining. No farms, no food. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow morning with some farmers. Talking about eating local, which is not just hip, it's vital for environmental stability and keeping farmers in business. So join us for that conversation tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Justice Department is pushing to wrap up its investigations into possible criminal activity in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. Why some people say the probes have been politically motivated. Others believe senior bank executives should be going to jail.
Listen to the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Let me get out of the lotus position here. I can't hold that for very long. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Talking about yoga today with Liza Morgan, an instructor at Yoga One, Stacey Winslow, owner of Evolution Yoga and Z, Mary Lou Buck, an instructor at the YWCA and the Cornwell Center, and the founder of Yoga for Life, the progenitor of all yoga here in Charlotte. Adam Whiting is an instructor and founder of Y2 Yoga, Nodal Yoga. Yoga. There's a lot of yoga going on, visualizing yoga. There are lots of different varieties, which I alluded to just before the break, and Mary Lou was talking about a few. How many different kinds of yoga do you practice, do you teach, for the four of you sitting around this table? We've talked to Mary Lou about it. What about you, Stacey?
You know, it's many styles. And I do want to say she was speaking with regard to vinyasa. Mm-hmm. What a lot of people don't know is that vinyasa means to place in a special way. And it is to emphasize when you're in the middle of a posture, it's very important to remember, especially if you've never done yoga, there is no perfect pose. There's only healthy poses. And that's what a teacher is there for. We're there to help guide you through your practice, to find that pose for you in your body, not your mat mate's body. As for me, I teach Hatha Vinyasa. So I teach gentle, hot, power.
And what's the difference between all these things? Because I mentioned
my gentle yoga involves no downward facing dogs. So it's,
I beg your pardon.
So just come and it's the quintessential come and just relax and find your Zen class. And same for my restorative yoga. Lots of bolsters and props and pillows.
And hot yoga is where they turn the heat up. Is that right?
Well,
literally,
not all hot classes are created equal. In some studios around town, hot can mean 105 degrees. For my hot yoga, I think 85 is well and plenty. And so do my students.
Okay. All right. Liza, where do you stand in all of this?
I love to practice at other studios. That's sort of my guilty pleasure, is to go around and experience other styles than what I have been trained to teach and what I teach. I do teach a hot vinyasa power class, and I also teach deep stretch. And deep stretch, we hold the postures longer, so you may – and in my deep stretch, I'm not going to teach downward facing dog or any kind of flow either. So you're really coming in and holding things for 3 minutes or so and letting your body relax into the pose with the use of blocks to give support, to bring the floor up to you, pillows to just open things up more. And every body is different.
As I listen to the four of you talk, this is a foreign language. I'm wondering if this is intimidating to people when they first start doing this. Because not only are you learning poses and you're learning what this is all about and how it impacts you and whether or not a particular style or a particular class works for you, you have to deal with the vocabulary. How intimidating is that when you came into it? How intimidating was it for you, Adam?
Yoga it's a lifelong practice. And I've heard several teachers say, and I say now, that you're a beginner in yoga for the first at least 7 years of studying the practice. I believe stepping into the studio for the first time, and you're right, it is a different language. The poses we call are in Sanskrit, but a lot of times we will translate that into English and then give dynamic physical cues to lead you into the posture as deeply as you can be. It is a foreign language. It's a foreign concept for the body. Our bodies aren't used to, I mean, I'm holding a handstand right now. You might not be able to hear it in the radio, or see it on the radio. But it is intimidating at first. And one of my teachers that said something that sticks with me forever says, when you come to a yoga class, you you suck until you shine. it's not going to be pretty for the first couple of classes, but
That's right.
Learn and you grow and you give it a chance.
I read a couple of articles about this by renowned instructors yesterday that said that students should never think that they've got it, that there are many more levels to advance to, and that mm-hmm. if you think you're good, there's always someone better and always more to learn.
Absolutely.
Totally true.
Well, now, totally true came from Liza, who used to be a dancer. Well, maybe you still are a dancer, but you were a professional dancer, and you don't get to be a professional dancer unless you can work toward perfection and achieve it. This is the whole antithesis of that.
Right. That's what really drew me into yoga, was the freedom that came from just being there for me, whatever I need on that day. And I do consider myself, I mean, I teach, but I am a student, and I am still, I would consider myself just a beginner growing in my practice, learning more about myself, learning more about what works for me. And sometimes that means taking big risks and getting really messy, like falling and actually, you know, making a mess of what I'm trying to do so that I can discover something new about myself and about what I need. So, yeah, there's no perfection.
This all sounds pretty esoteric to me. And let's just talk about dance for a second, mm-hmm. because you know when you've achieved something.
Right.
You
it's know measurable.
Measurable, and you can look at yourself in the mirror, and you could look at the person next to you, and you know mm-hmm. whether you are sharper than they are, better than they are, you have better form than they have, or they have better form than you do.
Yeah.
You can see that. But what this is completely individual. There's no yardstick. There's no measurement.
There
is a yardstick.
For me, my yardstick is myself, my past self. How I would have responded to chaos previous to yoga versus now.
Okay.
That's my yardstick.
Explain that.
For instance, my son, I have two kids, 16 and 20-year-olds, mm-hmm. and my 20-year-old called me a couple of weeks ago, and he was in the middle of panicking. He had flipped his Jeep upside down, and I calmly said, okay.
You are serene when you're talking about this. I just want to point this out, that there's no tension in your face at all. Go ahead.
And now, the previous me would have gone into full-on panic attack mm-hmm. with him, escalated him, called my husband, and he's usually the one to keep the calm and while he's having a panic attack on the inside. Mm-hmm. But I kept my son calm, I kept myself calm, and we got through the situation. He wasn't hurt. No one else was hurt.
And you attribute that to yoga?
Absolutely.
Why? What is it about yoga that allowed you to remain calm?
Yoga, we get so many of our philosophies in yoga from what's called the Yoga Sutras. And one of the sutras is all about calming the fluctuations of the mind. You have to go through the body, which has been mentioned, right? I think it was you, Adam, who said that.
Absolutely.
So that you can then burn off all that extra energy so that you can then get to the business of calming the mind. Mm. And it's a practice. And the more you practice it, the easier it becomes. And so now, do I have my freak out moments? I do. They're just fewer and farther between now. Mm.
And you were nodding in recognition of that, Mary Lewis. Stacy talked about that comment. And one of the things that you do, I'm told, is that you teach restorative classes. That's come up in this conversation. What are restorative?
I don't teach restorative regularly. Sometimes
okay.
I do restorative postures. Basically, well, a simple one would be to lie on your back and put a blanket under your chest, under your upper back, so that you can open up your front body. To stretch around the shoulders, the chest.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an example of restorative.
And you teach, Liza, I'm told, the Baptiste
Yes.
Style of yoga, which you say is approachable to any body type, fitness level, or age. So what is that? What is the Baptiste style?
Well, it's more, so Baptiste, it is in a heated room. It is the hot power flow. What I feel like is
What does that mean, hot power
flow? Hot power flow. So the room is heated at Yoga One, where I teach. The room is heated around 95 to 100 degrees. And we practice a sequence that does begin with sun salutations. I know that's like a foreign thing to you, but basically it's flowing, moving with breath and building internal fire in your body so that you can actually begin to release some of the tension, release some of the things that are constraining and holding on. And then it moves through balancing and standing postures and then comes down onto the floor to create some opening and holding postures longer so that there is some release there. And the reason I feel like it's approachable is partly because of the methodology of Baptiste yoga, which is really, it's very simple. It's you are ready now, be a yes, and that can mean on your mat, be a yes to whatever you're looking for, and give up what you must. And so for me, a lot of times the give up what I must shows up as like, what do I need to drop right now? Is it my judgment of myself? Is it comparing myself to when I did dance and I could put my foot over my head and I've lost some of that flexibility because I'm gaining strength and integrity in my body through yoga. And so sometimes it's just breathing deeper, being a yes to deeper breath.
A lot of this stuff looks very difficult to do and to maintain, because some of you, as you mentioned in this deep stretching, you maintain the poses, what, for 3 minutes at a time.
Right.
How fit do you have to be to do this? And does it make you fit having done it?
When I started my yoga practice, part of what made it so awful was I was about 240 pounds.
Oh, come on.
Really? I was. But I have students who weigh more than that, men and women. And that's part of what's very important to me is that, and what's so wonderful about the Charlotte yoga community I know, is that we work very hard to make this accessible to all levels of fitness and body types. And we just make it very warm and inviting. So we can modify.
But that didn't answer my question. How fit do you have to be and how fit do you become?
Well, with the doctor's permission, it doesn't matter.
There is no bar. There is no, you know, we're not standing at the door with a tape measure and making sure that you can touch your toes before come into a class. Everybody is welcome and everybody can move. There's no bar. You come in.
Well, let me rephrase the question. If you are not fit, if you are a couch potato and have been for 30 years and suddenly you decide, well, I heard this show on NPR, let's go and do yoga.
Yeah, let's do it.
You can do yoga.
Absolutely.
I fully believe that yoga is for everybody. And it's part of it is just looking at the different types of yoga and classes, trying things out and realizing that maybe you're not going to come into a hot class. That might not be for everybody,
right,
at that moment when you're beginning, but you can find something that works for you. And it does just start with breathing.
You were enthusiastic about that response, Mary Lou. You can do yoga. You can do yoga.
Anyone can do yoga. I have students of all ages, all fitness types.
People missing limbs.
Like in a typical class, I might have a brand new person coming in and also someone who's been doing yoga for a number of years. I have a woman who comes who is over 90 years old. I have quite a few 80-plus year olds. I'm age 77 myself.
Always wanted to
and
know that.
I don't do everything
stunning
that I used to do, but I can do. I can still do headstand and do most everything I could ever do. I teach in great detail. I try not to talk too much and give too much. But I try to say, okay, right foot in, left foot out, very detailed so that you can pick it up. I give modifications for people who could do less. I suggest options for people who can do more. So I try to make it suitable for everyone.
Aside from the learning the vocabulary and feeling like a fish out of water in the beginning because you don't know what's going on around you, most things that you learn, you take classes at a particular level. If you take dance, you take a beginning dance lesson. You're not in there with the people who are ready to go to the Metropolitan Ballet or something like that, or the American Ballet. So these classes are mixed. There are beginners. There are experienced people. There's skinny people there. There are fit people there. There are unfit people there. So how does that all work? How do you go into this class and not feel like you're going to be the person who sticks out like a sore thumb?
Well, there are classes who are offered for more advanced. Like a typical power yoga class would not be for a person just starting yoga.
Okay.
I mean, I hope. And I have many students come to me and said, I went to this class and I knew immediately it was not the right class for me. So they come to my class when they want something a little more gentle. They don't want so much sun salutation, go, go, go.
That's something else I read yesterday about this, is that people will sometimes go to a class and they'll know this is not a good class for me. Now, that might be the end of it for a lot of people. This is not for me.
Oh, yeah. I would encourage them to what I do, I call yoga hop. People go bar hopping. I don't. But go yoga hopping. Take a friend along if you are more comfortable that way. But don't take one experience as the experience. We have such a wonderful, we're lucky in Charlotte. We have so much wonderful yoga, so many well-trained teachers here that are warm and loving. And so go out and experience another class, a different type of class. And I promise you will find your home.
There's also evidently a lot of diversity in the yoga community here, I am told. And you may be partially responsible for that, Stacey, because this does have.
I like to think so.
I went to a website that talked about yoga. I think it was a Canadian website. And it said that the yoga industry capitalizes on this to a certain degree, that it's gotten this image of being for wealthy, skinny white women. And that is not the case. And you are an African-American, and you mentioned that in your classes that you teach, there are overweight people in there as well.
Yes.
That's a lot of different kind of diversity going on.
Yeah. I've made it my business to try. And I think just based on who I am, I'm African-American, I'm a curvy woman. It's just my package has made me more accessible to people. But I also try very hard to tell them to bring along their friends, tell your friends. And I take my friends, I don't isolate myself in the yoga community, and I'm very proud of that. I make a point to make friends in the yoga community. I encourage my students to go and experience other studios, and my students too. That's the only way we're going to spread the diversity.
How many guys are involved in your experience, Adam? I mean, are you the only one? You can't be the
not the only one. No, but I will say we are definitely a minority right now, which is actually pretty ironic, because in the roots of yoga, it used to be a practice that only men could do.
Yes,
it wasn't open to women when yoga started, the asana started originating, and now it's very much flipped, where men are the minority. But like Stacey said, it's open for everybody, and our job as yoga teachers and yoga practitioners is to help try to break that preconception of you have to look a certain way to walk into this room, you have to be a certain class or a certain race or a certain level. Our job is to be welcoming to absolutely everybody that walks into that room and make sure that they feel at home. And like you said, it might not be a specific studio. Each studio has a different voice and a different characteristic, and you need to find the one that's the right fit for you.
That is Adam Whiting. He's an instructor and founder of Y2 Yoga, Noda Yoga, and Big Horizon Yoga. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bradley Arendt Bolt Cummings LLP, a full-service law firm whose lawyers are industry professionals experienced in serving the banking and financial services industry in Charlotte and throughout the nation. Details at babc.com. The Justice Department is pushing to wrap up its investigation into possible criminal activity in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. Diane Rehm and her guest will talk about why some say the probes have been politically motivated And others believe senior bank executives should be going to jail. That's in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have something to contribute to our conversation on yoga. Now's the time. Stretch those fingers. Get to that computer. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks will get you to us, and we are coming right back.
At Morning Edition, we follow a simple formula. If we're curious about anything in the world, just about anything, we pick up the phone and call anybody in the world, from top newsmakers to small-town mayors to soldiers in the field. We ask the questions that get at the story behind the headlines. Listen each weekday to a conversation with the world. It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
Comprehensive, in-depth morning news, weekdays from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about yoga today, my favorite topic. No. We're talking about yoga today with four yogis. Eliza Morgan with Yoga One, Stacey Winslow with Evolution Yoga NC, Mary Lou Buck, who teaches at the YWCA and the Cornwell Center, and Adam Whiting with Big Horizon and Noda and Y2 Yoga. Sajida, a yoga studio owner on Moorhead Street, emails us that yoga is a total mind and body workout. That being said, it reduces recovery time and increases concentration while sharpening focus, all things that are important to an athlete. If the biggest athlete in the world, LeBron James, practices yoga, which he does, just imagine what sports would be like if more athletes practiced it.
That's so true. Yeah, we have, just to throw out a couple more different types of yoga for you, because we're not overloaded as it is, but you'll see a lot of classes being marketed as yoga for runners, yoga for CrossFitters, yoga for weightlifters, yoga for this, because yoga is a wonderful addition and supplement to whatever your fitness and workout routine is.
So if you're taking yoga for runners, what is it allegedly doing for you and for your running ability?
So for running, and I used to be a marathoner, running is, it's an amazing workout, but it is fairly jarring on the spine, and fairly, it will tighten basically everything, your hips, your IT band, your hamstrings, your psoas, everything starts to constrict a little bit. So if you are having a yoga for runners class, it'll be most likely be a deep stretch yin style class where you just focus on gentle poses that will start to lengthen the muscles back out again, just bring some suppleness and some pliability back into the muscles so that they can function at their best and recover faster.
Is that the reason for all these different poses, to stretch different muscles? Or are there other reasons for the posing?
Strengthening, stretching, body alignment.
And also on a deeper level than that, one of the lineages that I study is para yoga. And we're very interested in the energetics of the poses. Subtle energy of the poses. And it's a little bit of a deeper level than just the physical movements, but it's about what poses do to your energetics, to your energy.
Is this chi?
It is not.
Chakras.
Yeah. Chakras. So, you know, some poses, forward folds, kind of calm you down. Some poses, like back bends, give you energy. There's different alignment and different energetics to each pose that will bring your energy into a different place.
I'm curious what the headstand does for you. Since you still do them, Mary Lou, I'm curious what that does.
What we tell people is it stimulates your brain.
Because the blood flows to your brain?
Blood flow. Well, the circulation to any inversion create circulation of all the fluids in the body.
We talked about how you never stop learning in yoga. If you think you've learned it all, you're wrong, because there's somebody better than you. There's still more to learn. You're always a student, and you've been doing this since 1969. Are you still learning?
I am.
What are you learning?
I still go to workshop.
What's the last thing you learned that you didn't already know after 40 years of doing this?
It's hard to say what the last thing I learned is, but I think I continue to have different awarenesses in my body. I realize that I need to push the outside of my foot into the floor a little more as I get older. Mm-hmm. I don't have as good balance as I used to, and it's extra important for me to really ground down to strengthen my muscles, my core muscles, my muscles around my hip joints, so that I can hold a posture.
You just said that you were 77 years old.
Yes.
Had you not been practicing yoga for 40 years, what do you think the difference in your physical strength, your physical nature would be? What would your life be? How would your life be different had you not been practicing yoga?
I think I would be much more tense. I think I would probably have poor posture. My joints would hurt, and I eat a vegetarian diet. I like to think the diet has a lot to do with my good health and my joints feeling comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think I would be under more stress than I am.
And Stacy, you mentioned that a lot of people who are slightly overweight come to yoga, and I think that's commendable for them because it's got to take a lot of courage to get into that yoga outfit.
It takes a lot of courage to do a lot of things in American society when you're overweight.
Uh-huh. So what does that do? What does it do? Because you lost weight. Did you lose weight because of yoga?
It's a loaded question. and I get that question a lot. The short answer is yes, but not the way you think. Yoga makes you very aware of yourself, your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It is a lifestyle. It is not just going on your mat and doing a bunch of postures. And so I became aware of what I was putting in my body and how those things I was putting in my body were affecting my body. And so I stopped eating so much processed food and junk food. Mm-hmm. And during my 30s, just before I discovered yoga, I suffered from adult acne. And that went away with yoga. I still am very much a foodie and enjoy food very much, but the food I like now is high quality.
Mm-hmm.
I am a fan of farms. I've gone on the Know Your Farms tour, and it's all encompassing. It's a lifestyle.
And you were nodding in recognition of that, Liza. Talk about that.
Well, I agree with something Stacy said earlier too about being in reaction, and I feel a big thing for me has been just being able to stop and respond with choice, and just instead of being in like a constant state of reaction to my situations. Mm-hmm. And yoga has definitely been that for me, has made the difference for me.
A lot of people are reaching out to us here on social media, Twitter, Facebook, etc. Let me share some of this with you. Caitlin on Facebook says, I started practicing yoga when I was pregnant with my first child. I had the best yoga teacher, and she helped me fall in love with yoga. I truly believe I was able to give birth to my second and third child with no drugs because of the breathing methods I learned in yoga. It's true, you don't have to be in perfect shape to start. I was an example of that. I couldn't touch my toes. Now I can put my hands flat on the floor. I've lost the baby weight and an extra 25 pounds. I can't say enough good things about
yoga. You don't have to be mm-hmm. flexible to do. I am not. Most of my students are more flexible than me, and they're shocked when they find that out. It's not about what you can do in your body.
I had somebody tell me one time that if you say you're not flexible enough to do yoga, it's like saying you're too dirty to take a bath.
Yes.
So, really, it's you come where you are.
Yes.
You know, and go from there.
And coming to the breathing, that's pivotal for a practice.
Yes.
And Pandaji, one of my teachers, he just says that we are the only beings that can meaningfully and deliberately take control of their breath, that can shape the breath, can accentuate our inhales, can retain the breath, can accentuate the exhales. And that, I mean, that's not mysticism, that's science. If you flood the body with oxygen, you'll be moving in one direction. If you calm the exhales down, you'll be calming the energy and initiating the parasympathetic nervous system. It's beautiful what we can do with just our breath.
Mary Lou?
Breath has a lot to do with how you can calm down, as you said, and it's energizing. It helps you focus.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we haven't pointed out in the yoga philosophy, Maya, M-A-Y-A, is illusion, the world outside. Mm-hmm. And so we think of everything on the outside as being Maya, illusion. The real world is the world inside.
Mm-hmm.
And the focusing on the breath, the posture, sensations, being out of bodies helps us focus inside. And that's part of
Absolutely.
The reason that the physical yoga originally led into meditation.
Rick emails, can you ask the group what they would recommend for an older 60-plus that has a hip replacement and limited movement?
Chair yoga.
Chair yoga?
Absolutely. Oh, we dropped a new one on you, Mike.
That sounds like it's right up my alley. Chair yoga.
I'm not sure I agree. I mean, if they're if they're really limited, yes, chair yoga is wonderful. If they won't do yoga on the floor, if they can't get up and down, chair yoga is wonderful. But I mean, I have students who have had hip replacements.
Okay.
One of my favorite yoga teachers, does teacher training at Yoga for Life in Charlotte, had a hip replacement 6 months ago, and he sat down in front of the class. He said, "I had a hip replacement," and he immediately put his feet up in lotus position.
Might doing yoga actually improve this person's ability to move?
It can. You have to be very careful, though, because the hip can pop out. And I've had students with hip replacements before. So you would want to have – that student would want to have a very clear and pointed dialogue with their teacher before class. Mm-hmm. And then proceed, and then they can better know what to do.
Yes, I think alignment is important. Strengthening the muscles around the hip is like forming your own brace, you know, to hold the bones in place, to hold the hip in place. But I started to say something else. Strengthening the muscles, I think, is the main thing, but alignment and just being careful.
Correct.
I know another yoga teacher had hip replacement, and her hip actually went out in a yoga workshop. And she knew how to tell people to help her get it back in.
Mm. Mohammed emails, are you aware of a list on all yoga studios and their modalities as a resource for new or adventurous yogis in our metro area?
No, but I will say that is an excellent question because it's something that I would love to see happen in Charlotte. The studios in the area and the owners in the area to work as more of a collective. I'd like that information to be out there. There are some studios I do happen to know that Y2 Yoga, Tanner has a list of some area studios on his website, which I really admire that he has taken the step to do that. And I would love to see all studios do that. I have my own website, and I intend to list that as well.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Chris emails, can you speak to the rise of yoga therapy and what it is and how you can find it here?
Lovely question.
Anybody know?
Yoga for Life is doing yoga therapy teacher training currently. Okay. It's a series of modules that you take to get the total certification. But it's basically using postures to help correct physical problems.
Now,
use it all the time, really.
Yoga, I'm just curious about the nuts and bolts here, about how often you go to class, how often you should go to class. Do you go to class every day? Do you go once a week? Do you go three times a week? Are the classes an hour long?
I'll let you come every day.
All of the above.
How does it work?
I think it's maybe different for everybody, and I've gone through different phases throughout my practice. Sometimes it works for me and it feels good to go every single day and maybe take one day off to rest.
And you're one of the ones that likes to float around to other studios,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do. And I could rattle off 14 or 15 studios in Charlotte right now. There's so much great yoga in Charlotte. And I do enjoy going because some days I need something more gentle. So I would go to a gentle class, a more restorative class. Some days I just want to sweat, and so I'd go to a hot class.
But I would like to add that if you are, like I've had students who, I have a student who tells me, oh, Stacy, I've gone to like yoga five times this week. Okay, that's great. I know two of those times were with me, and they were both power yoga. Where else did you go? And so I would caution balance. So if you have a rigorous like daily practice or most days of the week practice, make sure you're not doing too much power yoga, too much hot yoga. I wouldn't say there's too much gentle yoga or restorative yoga. You want to be safe.
I think it's really being and listening to what your body needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for a long time.
Most studios list the classes that they have with descriptions, so you can pretty well choose
And you've been doing this for a long time, teaching and also attending classes. How often do you do this every week in a class situation?
Right now I'm not going to as many classes as I would like to. I'm trying to get back to going to at least one or two a week.
Okay.
I teach four or five classes a week currently.
Is this something that you can do on your own?
Can you buy
DVDs and stick them in the player and do it at home on the floor?
For many,
Yeah, there's a lot of now, especially with the rise of technology, there are a lot of websites that will you can subscribe to and you can stream on your
podcasts.
And one of my favorite practices, and for the people who have been practicing for a little bit longer, is just a home practice, is not to have a teacher leading you, to unroll your mat at home and to be a truly in listening of what your body needs and give it to your body without having to go to a class. And so,
because if you go to class, you guys have to have, you have to pay rent, you got to turn the lights on, you got, heck with the, this hot yoga, you got to turn the heat up. Duke Energy loves you. So what does it cost? I mean, how can you afford to go to 3 and 4 and 5 classes a week?
There are so many different opportunities for yogis in Charlotte. You have, I mean, if you walk in and just take one class, it's going to be $15, $20. But you can buy an unlimited class pass, which will, if you practice a lot, that'll make each class cheap. There are tons of free classes, Liza can speak to that, in Charlotte that you can go into. And then most studios have what they call good karma classes or new teacher classes where you can drop in for $5.
Now, I have a note here that there are free classes the next two Mondays at 6 p.m. at the Pizza Peel in Plaza Midwood. That's the 19th and 26th of May. And you, I don't know, I don't think your classes are free, but you teach in a brewery.
They are free, actually. It is. And that was sort of the goal when we started Yoga
Where
on Tap.
Where do you teach this?
It's at Old Mecklenburg Brewery. Okay. And it's every Tuesday night from 6:30 to 7:30. It's called Yoga on Tap because it is literally right next to their tap room. They have a big event space where we practice on the inside if the weather is not beautiful like it has been. Last night we practiced outside, and there were 124 people that showed up for free yoga. And it's actually my goal in it is to bring different teachers in from the whole community. So it is a different teacher each week representing a different studio.
If we whet your appetite for yoga, we'll put some information about this on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. I want to thank the last person you heard, Liza Morgan, instructor at Yoga One, co-founder of Yoga on Tap, yoga and a beer. Stacy Winslow, instructor and owner of Evolution Yoga NC. Mary Lou Buck, an instructor at the YWCA and the Cornwall Center at Myers Park Baptist, and the founder of Yoga for Life. And Adam Whiting, instructor at Y2 and Noda Yoga, and founder of Big Horizon Yoga.